Participants in the 2013 Royal Rumble match will include Dolph Ziggler, 3MB, Antonio Cesaro, Wade Barrett, The Miz, Ryback, Bo Dallas, Kane and Daniel Bryan, The Great Khali, Kofi Kingston, the primetime players Darren Young and Titus O'Neil, Sheamus, Randy Orton, and John Cena. That was my best Vince McMahon impersonation from the 1992 Royal Rumble intro. Well, maybe not my best. I'm not quite liquored up enough. I don't have my grovelly voice going the way that Vince does. Why don't they do intros like that anymore? Can somebody give me a logical answer why? Those intros to the old Rumble pay-per-views used to get me so pumped and so amped for the shows. I don't know why they don't do that anymore. This is episode 257 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off Royal Rumble Sunday. Here for Sunday, January 27, 2013. I am the Solid Monster. We are going to talk about the Royal Rumble momentarily. Got some thoughts and predictions on the pay-per-view. I believe tonight is the 26th annual, if I'm not mistaken, Royal Rumble pay-per-view, emanating from Phoenix, Arizona. Our good friend of the show, Noah Mark, is actually at the Rumble pay-per-view. He attended the Royal Rumble Fan Fest, having a grand old time out there on the West Coast. We'll talk about the pay-per-view in just a second, but first thing I want to mention here, for those of you who don't know, which is probably very few of you since I've already mentioned it on social media, but I am proud to announce that I am now a contributor to JBL's official website, which is LayfieldReport.com. LayfieldReport.com is a kind of a news aggregate site. They have, you know, original content there, columns, not just on wrestling. I mean, there's columns on politics, sports, all different kinds of topics. I, of course, am writing about wrestling. What else? I have the first two columns are already up. First one I did was about Kane, who I know is a favorite of many of you. God knows over the years I've been doing this show, I've gotten tons of emails from Kane fans, especially before he won the world title a couple of years ago, people begging me, please tell me that Kane is going to win the championship again. And so many people very happy when that happened. But Kane is a guy who has been around forever. And as I mentioned in the column I did, you know, one of the things about Kane, I think, if not the thing that really stands out the most, is his versatility as a character. I mean, how many times has the guy waffled back and forth from being a babyface to a heel, being a horror figure to a comedy character? You know, the guy can do it all. And he's one of those rare legends that are still around and still active full-time. You know, he's not wrestling part-time. He's doing house shows and all the TVs, pay-per-views. He's a rare breed, because you don't see too many of that these days. Guys like Triple H certainly are not full-time. Chris Jericho comes and goes. Brock Lesnar, Undertaker. So it's one of those situations where enjoy what you have while you have it, because while Kane may not always have a four-star match when he's in the ring, I think he's a guy that doesn't get enough credit. And so that was kind of the nature of the first column I did. In the most recent one, and the idea when I first started talking to John about working with the Layfield Report, the idea was to do some sort of kind of a weekly, end-of-week, winners and losers in WWE type of column, which is what my most recent one is. It went up yesterday. Although it is mostly focused on The Rock and CM Punk, who I thought had a bang-up week, just a tremendous week of television for those two guys heading into the pay-per-view tonight. And I've got some praise for them, and just the opposite for John Cena. So you can check out my latest column again, LayfieldReport.com. My thanks to JBL. Very happy to be working with him. All right, now, let's turn our attention to the Royal Rumble pay-per-view, emanating again from Phoenix, Arizona. The 30-man Royal Rumble match. Why don't we start with that as we go through what the current card is. And this, of course, is subject to change, I'm sure. You know, tonight, perhaps they'll add a Divas match at the last second, which is not currently on the agenda. But let's talk first about the 30-man Royal Rumble match itself, which has been a favorite of mine for years and years, going back to probably, you know, the first Rumble pay-per-view I can have real memories of watching live probably was 1990, although I've seen all of them. But it was probably 1990 is what really stands out for me. Obviously, 1992, I've made no bones about the fact that, to me, that is the greatest Royal Rumble of all time. It has not been topped since. It likely never will be topped. And that was the year Ric Flair won. The only year to date that the WWF Championship at that time was up for grabs in the Rumble match itself. The stipulation that the winner of the Rumble would go on to headline WrestleMania did not come about until the following year, in 1993. Up until that point, in 92, the Rumble, you know, while it was a nice gimmick and people were into it, there was really nothing on the line. I guess that's not true. Hulk Hogan won twice, and in 91, he won the Rumble and went on to face Sergeant Slaughter at WrestleMania, but it was never, I don't think, specifically said up until 93 that the winner of the Rumble would get a championship match at WrestleMania. 92, the title itself was vacant, so that didn't count. But that was a great Rumble. There's been a lot of great Rumble pay-per-views over the years. 2000 at Madison Square Garden stands out to me as one of my favorites. 2008, I was in Madison Square Garden for my very first Rumble pay-per-view live. And even a bad Royal Rumble is still enjoyable. There are better Rumbles than others, but I always have a good time watching the Rumble, especially, you know, the last 2 years going over to a buddy's house and watching it with a group of people. It's a fun time. So the Rumble match this year is an interesting one, in that you've got a lot of current big names in the Rumble. Again, I outlined some of them earlier at the beginning of the show, right off WWE.com. The official list as it stands has names like John Cena, Sheamus, Randy Orton, Ryback, Dolph Ziggler. Long ago, I predicted that one of two people would win the 2013 Royal Rumble. This was months ago. And I said that that person would be either John Cena or Wade Barrett. He was my dark horse pick, just like Sheamus was my dark horse pick last year, and he ended up winning. I don't remember who my actual pick was. It wasn't Sheamus. But I said if I had to pick a dark horse, you know, watch out for this guy pick, it would have been Sheamus, and Sheamus won. So Barrett was going to be my dark horse pick here for 2013. But then they went and they put the Intercontinental title on him, and because of the way they book, I cannot see them having him win the Rumble and earn a World Championship match at WrestleMania while he's still the Intercontinental Champion. I just can't fathom them doing that. So that would leave John Cena. I'm ashamed to even say that after the horrific final segment from Raw Monday Night where Cena delivered the worst promo of his career. It was that bad. And think about the kind of ground that that covers. Think about some of the awful, god-awful promos that John Cena has cut. The comedy, the funny faces. I mean, just think about that. This was the worst. That being said, I am no longer picking John Cena to win the Royal Rumble. And it has nothing to do with that promo, as it turns out. My pick for the winner of the 2013 Royal Rumble is Dolph Ziggler. I'm picking Dolph, and here's my logic. Okay, it's two-pronged. First, I would be stunned if Rock vs. CM Punk does not go on last. It should go on last. That's the real main event. And if that's the case, it makes it easier for me to believe that WWE would have a heel, or at least entertain the idea of having a heel, win the Rumble because they don't have to go off the air like they did at the TLC pay-per-view last month with a Debbie Downer moment for all the little C-Nation members. But more importantly than that, I'm picking Dolph because the only way I can justify in my brain their treatment of Ziggler ever since his win at TLC, having him lose repeatedly the way that he has to John Cena, having Cena kick out of every single big move that Ziggler threw at him. By WWE logic, the way you justify that is, well, it's okay. You know, we can have him lose because he's going to win the Rumble. I mean, look at Wade Barrett before he finally beat Kofi and won the Intercontinental title. Got beat in a minute on Raw by R-Truth, of all people, 1 week. Lost to Kofi Kingston at TLC. Then he finally wins the title. You know, we've seen this time and time again. And I am still at a loss for how they can so badly bungle the momentum that Ziggler had coming out of that TLC pay-per-view. So much so that this is the only outcome for me that would have it all make sense. You know, Ziggler starts the Rumble at number one, does his Iron Man performance. It comes down to him and Cena, perhaps. You know, at the very least, I would expect both of them to be in the final four, if not the final two. And in the end, somehow, Ziggler pulls it out. That would give him two big wins on back-to-back pay-per-views, and a Royal Rumble win would be huge. You know, so you might ask, well, he already has the Money in the Bank briefcase. You know, why does he need to win the Rumble? It's called insurance. You know, he has until July to cash in that briefcase. It doesn't expire at WrestleMania. I was saying for the longest time that I hoped Dolph would wait until WrestleMania to cash in and not, you know, cash in at the last second like everybody else does, actually announce in advance that he was cashing in on the grandest stage and really make his quest for the title out to be a big deal. I know he's a heel, but it would be kind of refreshing to have Dolph say, you know what, this is my big moment. I'm cashing in and I'm announcing it now because I want the world to know that I'm going to WrestleMania and I'm going to win the championship. I was kind of hoping for the longest time that that's what would happen. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. That is, unless he wins the Rumble. You know, he could go to WrestleMania against Del Rio or Sheamus or whoever and lose, but still have that briefcase. So to me, it's perfectly fine to have him win the Rumble even though he's got the briefcase. You know, they can make up for the losses to Cena on TV by having him go out there and put on the performance of a lifetime for 50 or 60 minutes. And everything's okay. And here's one more thing, too, by the way. The Rumble should be used more often as a star-making vehicle. And by that, I don't mean have frickin' JTG win and he'll become an instant main eventer. To me, having an established main event guy win the Rumble every now and then is fine. I have no problem with that. As a fan, it's exciting. It's fun. You know, when Undertaker won a couple of years ago back in 07, did he really have to win the Rumble? No, he didn't have to win. But I thought the end of the 07 Rumble with him and Shawn, which would set up the later WrestleMania matches they would have, I thought that was brilliant stuff. So to do that every now and then is fine, you know. Steve Austin won the Rumble 3 different times. Hulk Hogan won it twice back in the day, although back then I don't think that was really what the Rumble had been designed for. I don't think the Rumble existed to kind of make new stars. When you have guys like Hulk Hogan and Big John Studd, you know, winning the Rumble, I don't think the original idea was to make new stars. But when Shawn Michaels won it for the first time in 1995, and again in 96, he was on the cusp. You know, he was right there on the edge of kind of breaking through that ceiling and becoming a main event guy. He had yet to win the WWF title. Some people probably still didn't see him as a headliner, and I think the Rumble changed that. You know, same for Batista in 2005, although Batista was already well on his way, I will admit. But, you know, same for Mysterio in 06. Who I don't think was ever looked at as world championship caliber. It probably still isn't by some people. And Alberto Del Rio 2 years ago. You know, this could be that moment for Dolph Ziggler that really puts him over the hump. So he's my pick for the Rumble. I'm changing my mind. I'm no longer going with John Cena. Dolph Ziggler is my pick. They can really get his momentum going with a big win tonight. You know, losing will not kill him. If he goes in there and he stays in there for 45, 55 minutes and has a great showing, it's not going to kill him. He'll be fine in the long term, but I really think that winning will help him, you know, that much more. Winning will help erase some of the garbage we've seen on television over the last couple of weeks, kicking out of the big moves, making him look inferior, basically, to John Cena. I could have sworn the whole point of giving him that big win last month was to do the complete opposite and not make him look inferior, but make him look like he was on the same level, kind of, as John Cena, and I think they've stalled a little bit here, and I think tonight they can really go far in changing that. So Dolph's my pick. The other big match tonight, of course, is for the WWE Championship. It is the biggest WWE Championship match, in my opinion, that this company has had in years. It is The Rock challenging CM Punk for the title. We first found out in July on Raw 1000 that The Rock would be challenging the champion on this pay-per-view, whoever it may be. And it turns out that it is CM Punk, who now is in day 430, I don't even know. He's held the title for 14 months, which is very impressive. Longest reigning champion in more than a quarter century. This match, to me, is a big deal. They've done a very good job of making this match out to feel special, and not just your regular run-of-the-mill CM Punk title defense, your regular Royal Rumble championship match on the undercard that really doesn't mean much. This match is bigger than the Rumble match itself, and it's not very often that they book a title match that feels bigger and more special than the Rumble match itself. This match should headline the show. I believe it will. I mean, look, if there's some sort of swerve finish where The Rock doesn't win the title, maybe they decide, let's not put this on last. But I don't know. I can't see this match not going on last. But wherever it goes, this match I have high expectations for. I think that The Rock in there with a guy like Punk, it's going to be a test for The Rock, because as much as I love The Rock, you know, last year at WrestleMania, to me, I was there live. I went back and watched, you know, the television version after the fact. The Rock looked blown up to me. At some point during that match with John Cena, The Rock looked totally, completely, utterly gassed. And I give John Cena credit for keeping things together. I thought they had a pretty good match. Not a, you know, a great match or anything like that, but it was fine. But now this is going to be another test for The Rock. He's in there with a guy who can go. CM Punk is not going to wrestle for 15 minutes and get gassed. I can promise you that. Is The Rock going to be able to go that long and really put in a good match? I think he will, and I guess we'll see. On Raw Monday night, Vince McMahon announced that if The Shield attempted to interfere or did interfere in this match, that Punk would be stripped of his title. So that would seem, anyway, on the surface, to eliminate The Shield from interfering in the match. Not that they won't make an appearance, but I don't know that they'll... I don't see any way around that stipulation. It was made very clear if they interfere, Punk loses the championship. I did find it interesting that on Monday night when Vince appeared, he banned The Shield, but made no mention of Brad Maddox or, and I mentioned this on Twitter, Brock Lesnar, interestingly enough. Now, you could say, why would he mention Brock? And that's true, right? Brock quit on television months ago. He's had nothing to do with Punk. I just found that kind of interesting. They could have Lesnar show up as Heyman's backup plan with The Shield being barred, cost Rock the match. Punk keeps the title at least for one more month. And this doesn't mean that it has to be Rock versus Lesnar or Mania, which I don't believe they're doing. Quite the contrary. You know, it gives them a sensible reason for bringing Lesnar back into the picture, because remember, he quit. You know, why else would he return unless Heyman asked him to do him a solid, which in this case is interfere in the match and help Punk keep the title? You know, this could very easily lead to Triple H getting involved at some point. Not in the match, but bringing Triple H back into the mix, which would then lead to the rematch between Lesnar and Triple H for WrestleMania. And in the meantime, Rock goes and takes the championship next month in the Chamber. I don't think it would mean as much. I would rather see Rock win the title here, if he's going to win the title at all. I'm just saying, they could go in that direction. Now, of course, if they really wanted to rock the boat and keep things, you know, if they could keep things under wraps, which is hard to do in today's day and age, but if they could keep things hush-hush, my grand idea, at least before they added the Shield stipulation, which kind of ruined the whole thing, but let's pretend they didn't add that stipulation. My idea would have been to have Steve Austin come down during the match as a surprise to combat the Shield, whether he comes down with a chair or he just comes down and stunners them all, whatever the case may be, gives Punk a stunner, helps his buddy Rock win the championship. I mean, after all, how many times has Punk name-dropped Steve Austin on television over the last several months and badmouthed him? You know, he doesn't do it every week, but there's been at least two, three, four different times where he's gone out of his way in mentioning certain legends to single out Steve Austin as being somebody who's not as good as him. You know, time for a receipt. That then sets up Punk versus Austin for Mania, and then Rock versus Cena, or whatever they want to do there. But again, fantasy armchair booking on my part, I admit. My assumption in this match, more realistically, Brad Maddox comes down for some sort of false finish. Maybe there's a ref bump. Maddox comes out, perhaps, wearing a referee shirt. People get excited, or not excited, but they get, you know, kind of frightened, thinking, oh, shit, you know, this is going to be a screw job here. Rock kicks out. Maddox quickly gets disposed of. Punk eventually eats a Rock Bottom. And 1-2-3, new champion. That's how I could see it going down. However it happens, the outcome to me is the same. Rock wins. Rock becomes 8-time WWE champion. If they're going to, you know, make the switch, I say don't wait. Do it now. Just go and do it now. You know, people will remember this Rumble as a much more special show if Rock wins the championship, which I think has always been the plan, so why deviate now? I really don't see this match going any other way. I think Rock leaves with the championship. Alberto Del Rio will defend the World Heavyweight title in a rematch against Big Show. Another last man standing match. I'm going with Del Rio in that match. Hell no. Kane and Daniel Bryan defend the tag team titles against the Road Scholars. I'm going to go with Road Scholars in this match. I feel like they've been feuding for months off and on, and they've had a couple of matches already. Kane and Daniel Bryan seem to always win. They have that graduation segment on Raw Monday night where they graduated from anger management class, which hopefully puts that whole storyline to bed. I was amused by it at first. I think it's run its course. We need to move beyond that. I don't know if that means they're going to break up Kane and Daniel Bryan. I'm sure at some point this year they will break them up. It may not be this soon. But I think it's time for a title change. I think it's time to get the belts off them, if, you know, have them chase the Road Scholars afterwards maybe. I think Cody and Damian have earned it. I think I find them very entertaining, and I'm going to go with them. We're going to have new tag team champions on this show. On the pre-show is going to be Antonio Cesaro defending the United States Championship against The Miz. I'm going with Cesaro. Any other outcome to me would make me sick to my stomach, so I'm going with Cesaro. And the other thing to mention here, in running down the participants in the Rumble match at the beginning of the Sound Off this week, I mentioned the name Bo Dallas. Bo Dallas is actually the son of IRS, Mike Rotundo, brother of Bray Wyatt, another NXT talent, the former Husky Harris, who should already be on TV, but that's for another day. Anyway, they had a tournament as part of the Royal Rumble Fan Fest in Phoenix this weekend, and with a whole host of NXT talents, Bo Dallas, of course, Leo Kruger, Conor O'Brien, Adrian Neville, who was the former Pac from Dragon Gate, Corey Graves, who was, by the way, a name that I mentioned on Sound Off 253 as being one of those NXT talents to watch for in 2013, and a couple of other guys as well. But in the end, Bo Dallas won, and so Bo Dallas will make his official roster debut on the Royal Rumble pay-per-view tonight as part of the 30-man Rumble match itself. Not a real surprise to me. What was a surprise to me is that Cassius Ohno was not involved at all in this little competition to potentially move on to the Rumble. I find that interesting. But as far as Bo Dallas is concerned, shouldn't really be a surprise. I've mentioned that Big Show interview he did here in New York with Peter Rosenberg last month when he was in town for TLC. That was the same interview where Big Show talked about Dolph Ziggler, how, you know, a lot of the veterans in the back have high hopes for him as a babyface, and he should adopt the super kick as his finish. Well, during that same interview, Big Show talked about a lot of the younger guys coming up through the developmental system, and he singled out Bo Dallas as being a guy that he and I think some other, some others backstage also have high hopes for. He's this, you know, white meat, classic babyface who's got a great comeback and a great look. So obviously this guy has his supporters, and he's earned himself a spot in the Rumble. He'll be making his television debut tonight, and we'll see how far he gets. But that's the Rumble rundown as it stands. They may add a Divas match. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But the two main picks for me, again, Ziggler wins the Rumble, Rock wins the title, and should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to the show. Let's backtrack a little bit, talk about Raw from Monday night. San Jose, California. This was the go-home show to tonight's Rumble pay-per-view. The show was basically built around three different things. Rock being barred from the building by Vicky Guerrero, who makes for a real shitty managing supervisor, in my opinion, when she bans her biggest attraction from entering the arena. I mean, that's just bad for business. Although, as Hulk Hogan once said to Kevin Nash during a match, they already have your money. So, what difference does it really make? So, it was built around that. It was built around a beat-the-clock challenge and a John Cena promo that, well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a little bit. We were told the winner of the Beat the Clock Challenge would get to choose their number for the Royal Rumble match, which turned out to be a swerve. Randy Orton beat Antonio Cesaro in the first match, 11 minutes, 36 seconds. And I don't know how many of you noticed, but Cesaro has finally lost the tape on his hand. So hallelujah, he's finally healed up from his torn tendons. Dolph Ziggler beat The Miz in 10 minutes, 56 seconds in a match that saw Miz only 1 week removed from being christened the new Ric Flair. He got no bigger an endorsement than from Ric Flair the previous week on Raw. And here on this show, he applied perhaps the worst figure four leg lock that I have ever seen. It was embarrassing. I understand people make mistakes. I make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. But week one, he fucks up the move. I know he used it on SmackDown the week before, but this was 1 week after the segment with Flair, so I still consider it week one. Just ridiculous. Speaking of Flair, by the way, I almost forgot to mention this. Ric Flair was supposed to fly to Japan this weekend to wrestle a match, a tag team match. I think the great Muto was involved and a few other people. So he flew out to Japan, and apparently Ric Flair did not wrestle. Ric Flair did not wrestle because there was a medical issue. He had to be taken to the emergency room, or he took himself to the emergency room. His leg was very badly swollen. Apparently he had a blood clot in his leg. And instead of you know, staying in the hospital. He went to the show anyway. He didn't wrestle. I take it his son, Reed, filled in for him. Reed is apparently over in Japan now, training at some dojo somewhere. Flair was at ringside. He, you know, did some chops, got some, you know, a little bit of physicality. And instead of going back to the hospital to have this blood clot taken care of and try to dissolve it, because a blood clot can be fatal. Make no mistake about it. I have people in my own family, let alone wrestlers who have dealt with blood clots before. That's serious shit you don't want to mess with. And the last thing you want to do when you have a blood clot is to fly. And apparently what Ric Flair did last night was, instead of going to the hospital, he decided to get on an airplane and fly back to the United States. So think about that for a second. Ric Flair, with a blood clot in his leg, got on an airplane for, what, 14, 15, 16-hour flight back to the U.S.? The man is insane. I mean, what could possibly be going through a person's mind to do something like that? I mentioned on Twitter, Chris Candido, according to his own family, Chris Candido, that's really the reason why he passed away all those years ago. You know, he broke his leg. He ended up developing a blood clot in his leg, and I believe he was flying, he was traveling, and I think what happened is the blood clot traveled from his leg to his heart, if I'm not mistaken. And when that happens, you're pretty much a dead duck. You're done. And he died. You know, we don't need a dead nature boy 35,000 feet in the air. I haven't heard that anything horrible happened. I assume he got back to the States, and hopefully he's having it taken care of. But that's just freaking ridiculous. I don't know what he was thinking by doing that. That's just insane. So I just had to mention that. Hopefully he'll get that cleared up. I take it that usually they give you blood thinners and try to dissolve the clot, and hopefully everything works out for Flair, but that was a dumb move on his part. So anyway, yeah, Miz fucked up the figure four badly. It really, really looked bad. Dolph won. We had Sheamus and Wade Barrett was the third and final beat the clock match. Time ran out after Ziggler, Big E Langston, AJ Lee, they all ran out for the distraction. And so Dolph wins. Dolph wins the beat the clock challenge, only not really. We would find out later from Vicky that Dolph won the right to choose his number, but that number would have to be either 1 or 2. So essentially the same thing. He gets to enter the Rumble first tonight. I said in my latest Layfield Report editorial that Dolph was one of this week's losers. Because again, winners and losers, I classify Dolph as being one of the losers this week, along with John Cena, who's almost always a loser. But as fans, I think we win, because that means we're probably going to get to see Dolph go in there for, you know, a majority, if not the entire Rumble match. I predict the entire Rumble match, and probably put on a hell of a show. So I, for one, have no problem at all with seeing Dolph Ziggler start at number one and go all the way to the end. I actually tried out the WWE Active. I don't know if anybody else has tried this. They have this WWE second screen experience. They call it WWE Active. They keep talking about it. I tried it out for the first time this week. I tried it during the Dolph Miz match when they went to a commercial break. I opened the WWE app on my iPhone, and it worked like a charm. You know, nice HD picture, commentary, you know, the whole nine yards. So later on, I tried it again during the Sheamus-Wade Barrett match, only instead of showing me action from Sheamus versus Wade Barrett during the commercial, I got a video of the last 90 seconds or so from the 1998 Royal Rumble match with Stone Cold, Steve Austin, and The Rock. Not that I was complaining, mind you, but it's like I just watched the awesome end of that Rumble, you know, crowd going nuts. Two of the biggest stars of all time in their heyday, and now I have to go back to watching this. That hardly seemed fair to me. But as far as glitches go, that was by far the best one I've ever experienced, so I heartily endorse trying the WWE Active thing. You never know what you're going to see. Big Show beat Zack Ryder in literally a minute with the knockout punch, and he deserved it too, as far as I'm concerned, after releasing that Hoski music video. This was a fitting punishment for putting us all through that. I'm having a hard time deciding who's the bigger loser, Zack Ryder or Tenzai. I've decided that I'm going to say Zack, just because no matter how many matches Tenzai might lose, in a legit fight, he would kill Zack Ryder. So at least he has that going for him. Caitlyn beat Alicia Fox with a gore in a very sloppy match. Divas Stopwatch had this at 2 minutes 6 seconds, so nice to see Caitlyn continuing that tradition in the absence of Eve. They did an anger management graduation skit with Dr. Shelby, Kane, and Daniel Bryan. At one point, there was a mild Dr. Shelby chant, which just blew my mind. They all did a big group hug at the end. They tried to get the entire crowd to join in and hug the person sitting next to them, and didn't quite work out as planned. This was largely just a giant waste of time. Bob Backlund was announced as the second inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame, class of 2013, a well-deserved honor, one that Backlund turned down back in 2004. The reasons why, you'll hear different ones. I had always heard that it was because he thought he had one last run left in him. He wasn't ready to go into the Hall of Fame. Obviously, WWE did not agree, although Backlund did go to TNA and actually did some pretty hilarious stuff while he was in TNA. It's just funny. You know, the guys in TNA used to tell stories, apparently, when Backlund was there. Because Backlund, and this is part of who he is. I mean, he's crazy in terms of his training and all that. And they incorporated that into his on-screen character. So he would be backstage doing, you know, squats or whatever the hell it is. And people said that as they would be driving to the tapings in Orlando, they would see Bob on the side of the road walking to the impact zone. You know, and they would stop to ask him, hey, you want a lift? And he would say, no, I'm going to walk. I guess he was walking from his hotel or wherever he was coming from, or his spaceship or whatever. It's just the kind of personality that he was. And that personality just happened to be a very bizarre one. But Bob's a character. I've always liked Bob Backlund. I have no problem with him going into the Hall of Fame. Nobody should. Just like nobody would have a problem with, you know, Randy Savage going in or Bruno Sammartino. Bob Backlund was as much of a star and an important part of that company's history. I mean, hell, the guy was champion for, you know, 5.5 or 6 years straight at one point. If you ignore the Phantom title change over in Japan that they don't acknowledge. But I also heard other stories where Bob, you know, it wasn't so much that Bob wanted another run. It was more that he was, you know, offended at the idea of people like William the Refrigerator Perry being in the Hall of Fame, thinking it was a joke. Whatever the case may be, he's going in now. That's all that matters. They actually showed footage of the match he had on WWF Superstars between himself and Bret Hart back in 1994. That was the first match I believe they ever had. And Bret beat him. And it was a hell of a wrestling match. I remember that match very well. So the match is over. Bret beat him. This was Bob's. The way they built this up was great because Backlund had come back to the WWF, excuse me, about the year before. It was early, maybe late 92, early 93. 45 years of age, I think he was at the time. This is Bob Backlund's big comeback. And admittedly, he was very bland and boring and very vanilla. You know, there was nothing exciting about him at all. He had a very impressive showing in the Royal Rumble back in 93. He lasted quite some time. I remember actually when he finally got dumped out by Yokozuna almost at the very end of the Rumble. He might have been the second to last person eliminated. People booed loudly. You know, Backlund was the one I believe to put the Iron Man performance in that year. Very impressive at his age. But it was that match with Bret that they had been building to, because for years Backlund was dying for another shot at the championship. You know, he never acknowledged the fact that he lost the title. He always thought he got screwed, because if you remember the match where he lost the title to the Iron Sheik back in early 84, it was his manager, Arnold Skolin, who threw in the towel. Backlund was, you know, he had a neck injury. Sheik had him in the camel clutch. His manager wanted to show mercy, threw in the towel. The title changed hands. Backlund was basically never heard from again for another 9 years after that. Backlund wanted that title shot. And so Bret beat him. And that's going to be demoralizing to anybody. You know, Bret goes over to him after the match. He asks for a handshake. Bob was gracious enough to shake his hand. And so Bret goes and he celebrates for a little bit. He poses in the corners with the title and everything. And then Bret walks back over to Backlund and he asks him for another handshake. And I just remember thinking, even back then when I watched it, you know, God, what a dick. What a dick Bret Hart is here. He already shook your hand. Yeah, there's no need to rub it into the poor guy. And Backlund must have felt the same way because he snapped. And he gave Bret one of the greatest slaps across the face that I've ever seen in wrestling. Not the best. To me, the best slap is still Stephanie McMahon. She slapped Chris Benoit backstage once on Raw so hard. And it was scary because Benoit's head literally snapped to the side and then it snapped back and he smiled. But anyway, that's a different story. So Backlund slapped Brett, proceeded to put him in the crossface chicken wing, a move that I used to put on my brother for months after that. And he would scream and scream and God, that was fun. I tortured that poor kid, but hey, that's what big brothers do. So I am very excited to see Backlund going into the Hall of Fame and that I will be there live in attendance at Madison Square Garden to see it with my own two eyes. We had The Rock and CM Punk. I just wanted to talk about that here, and then we'll get to John Cena, unfortunately. Rock and Punk, I mentioned earlier on. I talked about it on the Layfield Report. I thought they had a tremendous week. I could have done without the Rock concert, which was entertaining, don't get me wrong, but this match should be built up in a serious fashion. The Rock is out to win the championship. He's out to end CM Punk's reign. CM Punk comes out every week. He doesn't cut, you know, comedy promos and crack jokes. He goes out there. He's brutally honest. He's straight, very straightforward. He looks dead in the camera, which a lot of guys don't do these days. He looks dead in the camera. And, you know, again, his comments are very stinging. You know, he rips on the fans, but he does it in such a way where some people take it personally. And he has little morsels of truth in what he says. And I thought the way they handled these segments on Raw and SmackDown this week were tremendous. Rock came out. He was dead serious this week. Punk was up in the skybox. And Rock basically looked up and said, listen, I'm going to the Royal Rumble. I'm going to beat you. I'm going to kick your ass. I'm going to win the championship. And he mentioned some other stuff. It was, you know, Martin Luther King Day. So he incorporated that into his promo and said, I have a dream, and that dream is beating you, and whatever. Then the Shield came out. Lights went out. Lights came back on. The Shield was in the ring. They were beating the hell out of the Rock. It was a great, great attack. They left him laying with the triple team power bomb. Rock was bleeding, I think, from the lip or something. But it made for a great visual because they zoom in on the Rock's face. He's laying there on the mat. He's, you know, spitting up blood and spit. It's disgusting. It's gnarly. It's nasty. But it's a great visual. Rock is left laying. Then on SmackDown, Punk comes out and perhaps his final segment on television as champion before the event tonight. Cuts a great promo. Rock comes out, and The Rock is not there for kids' games. The Rock is not there for jokes and to have fun. He comes out. He looks ready to explode. He looks pacing back and forth. Totally, totally intense. Totally into the moment. And again, he tells CM Punk, listen, this Sunday I'm going to lift you up high above my head. Time will stand still for you because you will realize that it's over. And you will be rock bottomed, you will be pinned, and you will be beaten. And it wasn't about, you know, Fruity Pebbles. There was nothing about Cookie Puss or any of that bullshit. It was a great wrestling promo. It was a great go-home promo to what should be one of the biggest championship matches that this company has had in a number of years. It was exactly what it needed to be. It was exactly what pro wrestling should be. Very simple and to the point. Rock left. That was it. I loved it. I thought it was great. It made me want to see this match even more so than I already wanted to. Mission accomplished. Two thumbs up on that. Then we had John Cena. We had John Cena on Monday night. They had hyped throughout the entire show that John Cena was going to be there to deliver a message to the WWE Universe. And every time they say that, I cringe a little bit because I just know what's coming. And I didn't, you know, say anything. I didn't tweet anything. I just said, this is going to be really, really bad. I was hoping it wouldn't be, but basically this was every single John Cena promo you've ever seen, only it was somehow more annoying. And the key is this: it can be annoying, it can be unfunny, that's one thing. It could be uncool. Yeah, I made a comment a few weeks ago, I think it was a tweet, I said, God, you know, John Cena is one of the most uncool guys. His character is one of the most uncool personalities on WWE television. And I had one or two people tweet me and go, what do you mean by that? What do you mean he's uncool? If you need me to explain it to you, then you haven't been paying attention. The guy is a nerd. And this segment was no... I don't even know what this segment was supposed to be. I thought the point of a go-home segment was to convince people to buy the pay-per-view. Because this segment on Raw Monday night did the exact opposite of that. I actually think that last segment cost the company buys this weekend. I think there were people who were all ready to order the Royal Rumble who saw this segment and said, fuck that, I am not buying this pay-per-view. And if I wasn't so excited myself about the championship match, I'd have to really give some thought myself whether or not I was going to buy this pay-per-view. I mean, it's the Rumble, so, you know, chances are I would have, but I would have to think about it. What a wretched segment this was. He cut the worst promo that I have ever heard him cut. It was rambling. It made no sense. He was actually mocking and making fun of people at ringside. It didn't look like these people were in on it either. And it wasn't even like cool comedy that was actually funny. This wasn't funny. This made no sense. I was looking at the clock. I was thinking to myself, what is going on here? I have no idea what the point of this is. Nobody was reacting to it. Supposedly, according to reports, even people in the back, other wrestlers, when the show was over, were like, what the fuck was that? You know, I was hardly the... I could not have been the only person thinking this. And to make matters worse, as if that wasn't bad enough, they did the same paint-by-numbers ending they always do, with the parade of guys coming out. I'm going to win the Royal Rumble. No, I'm going to win the Royal Rumble. It just comes off as so cliched and so forced and so phony. You know, they had better hope that people turn that show off after Rock vs. Punk and the Shield attack. And judging by the ratings this week, many people did, so that's a good thing. This segment sucked. And by the way, I have to mention this as well. You'll get a kick out of this, I'm sure. PW Insider is reporting that WWE is considering adding a Twitter feed across the bottom of the screen each week on Raw. Yeah, because that wouldn't be, you know, distracting or anything. Apparently, I don't know if it would start this Monday or not, but they're giving thought to the idea of doing something like that. You know, the cable news channels here in the U.S. started doing that after 9/11, 12 years ago. Not a Twitter feed, because there was no Twitter back in 2001, but that's when they started using those news scrolls on the bottom of the screen, and they never went away. You'll notice you put on CNN or MSNBC, Fox News, any of that stuff, You'll see it every day. All day, every day. News scrolls in the bottom of the screen. Once it's here, it's here to stay. They're still around today. And I fear that if they do this Twitter scroll bullshit, and it's one thing to do it, you know, a few minutes and then they take it off the screen. I think TNA does that. I'm pretty sure TNA has a Twitter scroll on the bottom with feedback from people tweeting about Impact during the show. But it comes and goes. You know, they'll flash it for 15, 30 seconds, and then it goes away. Based on how I'm reading this, the idea would be to keep it on the screen for the entire show. I do not approve of this idea. So we'll see if they start with that this week or not, but I'm not liking that. Just a few comments on Impact Wrestling this week, because time is limited here. I enjoyed the show. Good show. Not great. The Aces and Eights follow-up was okay. You know, Taz came out. He cut a promo on behalf of Aces and Eights, and I'm sorry, but when Taz is in the middle of the ring with Aces and Eights in the background, and you have these big dudes like Mike Knox and Luke Gallows, okay, or Doc, whatever the fuck he's called, it's a bad visual, because Taz just does not look good when you have a full body shot like that. I'm sorry, but for a guy his height, he is grossly overweight. And he looks like a pudgy little troll, basically. I mean, I don't mean any great offense, but that's just what he looks like. And so I just thought the visual of him being in front and being kind of towered over by all these other people, and yet Taz is out there with the sunglasses on indoors, which, you know, if Taz were to walk into any bar in New York City like that, people would take one look at him. He'd probably have a popped collar, and they would say, douchebag, okay? Because when you wear sunglasses indoors, I don't know, I guess The Rock makes it work, I guess. Hulk Hogan makes it work. When I see Taz with it, he just looks like a douchebag. Either a douchebag or like he should be on a street corner begging for change, like he's blind or something. I don't know. But he cuts a hell of a promo. And that was one of the things I think I mentioned last week, is that Taz, as a mouthpiece for Aces and Eights, at least he is better in that role than D-Von. Taz definitely is better than D-Von was in that role. I'll give them that. But again, the problem is that Taz can't wrestle. Taz can't take a bump. So even if he can't wrestle a match, you would say, well, you know, he could be like a manager, like a Bobby Heenan or a Jim Cornette back in the day. Well, the problem is this. Bobby Heenan and Jim Cornette back in the day, what made them so great as managers or mouthpieces for their factions, Camp Cornette or the Heenan family or what have you, they could take bumps. In fact, Heenan took so many bumps that he fucked up his neck. You know, that's why he had neck problems later on. You know, the infamous incident from the Clash of the Champions show in WCW where Brian Pillman ran outside the ring, put his hand from behind on Heenan, who was, that was when the announcers were sitting up against ringside, and live on the air on TBS, Heenan basically blurted out, you know, what the fuck are you doing? Because he got spooked. He didn't know that Pillman was going to touch him because his neck was in such bad shape from all those years of taking bumps, bump after bump after bump. Taz can't even really do that. He can't take bumps. He can't do anything. He's got a bad neck. He's not willing to be physical. And so what do you do with him? You know, he goes out there and he says, well, I've got it in my contract when I signed my contract all these years ago that I'll own this place if somebody touches me, which, you know, at least they try to explain that, I guess. I thought it was weak. Or as Webmaster Mike might say, weak sauce. That's apparently his expression. I find it weak because, it's just, to me, and I'm a stickler for this, it comes off as too phony and forced. All of a sudden, Taz, who's been an announcer for all these years, tells us that it's in my contract that, you know, nobody can touch me, and if they touch me, I'll own the company. I mean, give me a fucking break. But at least they made an attempt, I guess, to try to explain why nobody can touch Taz. And, you know, then he goes back to the announce booth to be an announcer. I figured that, you know, he was out of the announce booth, at least for the time being, but apparently not. And he was jaw-jacking, you know, with Mike Tenay and Todd Kennelly and being a heel, basically. But then other parts, he was just normal old Taz. You know, some, as the show went on and they were doing commentary for some of the matches, I almost completely forgot. It just felt like every other week where Taz is, oh, what a great move by this person, and Kennelly and Tenay are going about their business. And, you know, I don't know. If this guy the previous week had joined this rogue renegade group that's been terrorizing the organization and, you know, the same group that's been going around beating people up with hammers and such, I don't know. I just find it odd that Taz can just go back to being normal announcer Taz. I don't know. I find that very bizarre. Again, we'll see. You know, they're trying to do something different with Aces and Eights, and God knows they have to try something different. And it was a nice little surprise, a nice little swerve last week. But I got the impression watching the TV show this week that that's all it was. It was meant to shock us and swerve us, and that's great for 1 week, but then week two comes, and you're kind of left scratching your head going, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. And by the way, in his promo, Taz basically didn't even give a reason why he joined Aces and Eights. I thought the quote reason he gave us, which I don't even remember it because it was such bullshit, it was so weak, it was so dumb. You know, come out the next week and give a logical explanation. Why did you do this? Why did you join this group of guys? And they went with the old, you know, easy way out, the cheap way out. I don't have to, you know, give an answer. Or why wouldn't I want to ride with these guys? Or I don't know. It was very weak, I thought. Joe Park was on this show. He's always a bright spot for me. He came out. He now has, by the way, his own theme song, which, oddly enough, sounds very similar to the old theme show song to L.A. Law. There used to be a TV show called L.A. Law many years ago. And this very much reminded me of the song to L.A. Law. I don't know if that was their inspiration for it. It wasn't the exact same song, but that's the first thing I thought. And I thought that was genius, having an L.A. Law ripoff, basically, theme song for Joe Park. So he came out, he cut a promo, he said that he's traded in the courtroom for the wrestling ring, and next week on Impact, they're going to be in Manchester, England, the first ever UK Open Fight Night. He's coming to Open Fight Night. He's going to issue a challenge to somebody. I love this segment. I love Joe Park. I've said this numerous times, and I will continue to say it until they do something to fuck up that character. He is the best character, I think, in pro wrestling right now, in WWE or TNA, and one of the bright spots in TNA for sure. So his one little segment I enjoyed very much. I also enjoyed the Austin Aries, Bobby Roode interplay. They had another great backstage segment. Apparently one of them was going to have to face Hernandez, and obviously Hernandez is a big, scary dude. Neither one wanted to step in the ring with him. I can't blame them. If you look at Hernandez doing a border toss, it's amazing he doesn't kill people with that move. So basically they were buttering each other up, and I just thought this was fantastic, because for months, remember, Austin Aries and Bobby Roode feuded for the TNA World Heavyweight title, and Austin Aries beat Bobby Roode at Destination X last July to become the champion, and Bobby Roode's thing for months and months and months was, it was a fluke. It was a fluke. You are a fluke. You didn't really beat me. You are a fluke. And Austin Aries obviously always denied that, and they had a few more matches and whatnot. Finally, all these months later, in an attempt to make Bobby Roode feel good about himself and motivate him to want to accept the match with Hernandez. In this segment, Austin Aries basically says, you know, listen, you are the longest running TNA World Heavyweight Champion in history. And I beat you, but you said it yourself. It was a fluke. And Bobby Roode is like, you see, I knew it. I told you it was a fluke. You admit it. And, you know, Austin Aries, of course, is like, well, you know, yeah, okay, sure, kind of, yeah, it was a fluke. And he said, good luck in your match, and walked off. And Bobby Roode realized, ah, shit, I'm fucked. So, again, I thought that was great. I love those guys. And I did see one spoiler, because TNA has taped, I believe, the next month of television is already in the can. They're over in the UK on their UK tour. Apparently, a lot of these Impact tapings, they had like a loud audience, lots of fans. I'm sure it'll look great on TV. It'll look big time, so I'm looking forward to that. But the next month of TV is already taped and done. I have not read the spoilers. I have not read the taping results. I have not read what matches have already been set up for Lockdown on March 10th. I don't want to know. I just, you know, I'd rather just watch the TV shows and find out. I did see one spoiler. I won't mention it here. For people who don't want to be spoiled. But suffice to say, I'm very excited about the future for Austin Aries and Bobby Roode. And again, one of the main bright spots on this TV show is the interplay between them, because they're out of the world title picture, and so what do? Well, you put the two of them together and you just let them feed off each other and let them play off each other, and so far it's been very entertaining. Main event was Jeff Hardy defending the TNA World Heavyweight Championship against Christopher Daniels, a man who has been on the TNA roster for a number of years, has never been world champion before, and so this was a big deal, and it was also a very good match. I enjoyed this match a lot. Jeff Hardy did win. He is still the World Heavyweight Champion. And after the match, Taz got off his headset. He walked down the aisleway. He was talking to Jeff Hardy, and while Hardy had his back turned, one of the Aces and Eights masked buffoons ran in from behind. They clubbed Hardy in the back of his knee with a hammer and ran away. And I guess that was the injury angle, I guess, that we had heard about to explain why Hardy is not on the UK tour, which, again, is bullshit, and TNA still owes its fans an apology that they have not issued, which I think is completely ridiculous, because they've known for months and months and months, even though they were advertising him, that Jeff Hardy would not be going to the UK because he has a felony conviction on his record. He's not allowed to go over there. And yet they still advertised him, knowing that, and a lot of people bought tickets, including people who angrily emailed me, as though it were my fault, telling me and asking me, listen, is Jeff really not going to be there? We bought tickets with the understanding that he was going to be there, or, you know, my kids were really looking forward to seeing Jeff Hardy. And, yeah, TNA knew, and they advertised him anyway, and I think that's bullshit. But this is their storyline way, I guess, of explaining why he will not be on television for the next 3 or 4 weeks. You know, again, they really put TNA... I can't even blame this on Jeff. TNA put themselves in this situation. What am I blaming Jeff Hardy for? It's not his fault. I mean, yeah, he committed the crime way back when, but still, this is on TNA. They had to take 4 weeks of television without their world champion being live on the show. It's kind of hard to do. So, anyway, that was Impact from Thursday night. They also had a Bully Ray Brooke Hogan segment on the show where they're begging Hulk Hogan next week to reinstate him. Which, again, is comical to me, because Bully Ray has not missed one episode of Impact, I don't think, since being suspended. It's kind of like when John Cena got fired after he the whole Nexus storyline back in 2010. Maybe he missed 1 week. I don't even think he missed 1 week. I'm pretty sure he missed no television time at all. And this is very similar to that. And apparently Bully Ray and Brooke Hogan are married. You know, you would think watching the end of that wedding last week that they didn't get married. But the way they were talking, and Brooke looked like she had a ring on her finger, like a wedding band or whatever, I guess they're officially married. You know, Bully Ray is officially Bully Ray Hogan. So there you go. A couple of other news bits here. Just want to mention two stories. Jake the Snake Roberts, for those of you who don't know, has been doing very well. He has been living with Diamond Dallas Page, I believe, I want to say down in Atlanta, in this house called the Accountability Crib, is what they call it. And DDP's been working with Jake to help him kick his addictions and also whip himself into shape by doing yoga and other exercises, because Jake was really out of shape. He was well over 300 pounds, in poor health. And if you look at the before and after pictures of what Jake looked like when he first went to the house to work with DDP and what he looks like now, it's like night and day. Jake has lost over 60 pounds. He looks more like Jake the Snake than he has probably in 15 years, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm happy for him. This is a guy who many years ago on the Sound Off I said would be dead in 5 years because he looked like he was on the path to nowhere. And I don't know if it's been 5 years yet. If it hasn't been 5 years, we're coming up on it pretty quickly. And it looks like Jake is not only still around, obviously, but doing very well for himself. So that's very cool to see. Unfortunately, an old shoulder injury has been aggravated, and his shoulder is really, really in bad shape. Apparently, to the point where he can no longer do the exercises and the yoga and stuff that has been very instrumental in getting him to kind of keep those demons at bay. And so I think there's people who are worried that if Jake doesn't have his shoulder fixed and he can't exercise and he can't do all these things, he may fall back on old habits. And so they created an Indiegogo page, which Indiegogo, I take it, is kind of similar to Kickstarter. And they set up this Indiegogo page to help raise money for Jake's shoulder surgery and rehab. Apparently, he has no insurance. He does not have the money for the surgery. And the cost of the procedure and the rehab and whatnot, $9,200. That was their goal. They wanted to raise a little over $9,000 that would allow Jake to have the operation on his shoulder. In less than 24 hours, they not only raised the $9,200 he needed, but they exceeded it. And I just checked his Indiegogo page a couple of minutes before I started recording the show, and last I checked, he was up over $18,000 raised. That's more than double, or close to double, what they had originally asked for. And Jake recorded a YouTube video. He was it's actually a great video that you should go watch. It's a video of DDP. Apparently, Jake's daughter, who he recently reconciled with, was there. They're at the dining room table with Jake with the laptop in front of them. They're going to check on the status of the Indiegogo campaign, and they realize that they've reached their goal. And they all freak out, and Jake gets all emotional, and he, you know, thanks the fans profusely and gets all teary-eyed, and just really, really cool stuff. And again, Jake, he's lost over 60 pounds. He's been sober for over 75 days, which is the longest stretch in over a decade that he's been sober for. I can tell you that being in Miami last year for WrestleMania with Noah Mark and Brian Blade, at the Wrestle Reunion convention the day before WrestleMania, they had a lot of legends there signing autographs. That was the day I met Bobby Heenan. They had a wrestling show with a ring set up and the whole nine yards. Jake Roberts was there. And from the moment we walked into the convention, there was Jake sitting between Lex Luger and I think Robbie T from TNA. And he had a beer bottle. And you just look at that and go, oh, boy. You know, you had heard that Jake was doing okay, and you walk in and you see that. And it's very upsetting. You know, it's very deflating to see that. And that was less than a year ago. And apparently, even from that point when we saw him with our own eyes in Miami, Jake has just turned his life around. And again, really cool to see. Apparently, the extra money that's been raised, you know, which is a question, you know, you wanted to raise X number of dollars. Now you've raised more than twice that amount. What happens to the extra money? According to the Indiegogo page, Jake has needed dental work for the longest time. His teeth have been all fucked up, probably from all the crack and shit he's been doing over the years. So I guess whatever extra money will go towards that, and I mean, who knows what else. So you can still contribute, apparently. People are still giving money. And you get a prize in exchange for it. So depending on how much money you give, you can get an autographed photo from Jake. Jake will give you a personal phone call. They have a whole list of different things that you can get in return for your donation if you're interested in that sort of thing. So I just wanted to mention that because I think it's a great story, and because usually when we talk about Jake Roberts and he makes the news, it's for all the wrong reasons. And so when he makes the news for the right reasons, I thought it would be worth mentioning. It's almost like when he makes the news, when people like that, him or Scott Hall or whoever, when they make news for the right reasons, that's the news. Like if they do something bad or they fuck up or something like that, it's people come to expect it. It's not even news, really. When something positive happens, that's actual news. So I'm happy to cover it. And by the way, mentioning Scott Hall, apparently Scott Hall is on his way to DDP's accountability crib to move in with him and work with him as well. And all I can say to DDP on that is good luck. I mean, it's one thing to help Jake. Scott Hall, you know, boy, Scott Hall's a whole different ball game, and he's got a whole host of health issues with all the drinking, all the shit that he's done. He's got heart problems. You know, can he be saved? I don't know. Again, it's like he says, you have to want to help yourself. You have to want to be saved. Jake, Jake has had a lot of deep-seated issues going back to his childhood, and you hear, you listen to him speak, you watch these YouTube videos, these testimonials that he does, and he sounds like he wants help, he sounds like he wants to turn his life around and kind of make up with his daughters and his family, and it's really cool to see him doing that. Scott Hall, I don't know. I just remember watching that E60 special on him on ESPN, and I didn't see a guy who wanted help. I just saw a guy who is tormented and just probably in his head feels like, you know what, I'm so far gone, dude, I don't give a fuck. But if anybody can help him, it's DDP. You know, him and DDP have been friends for a number of years. When they were in WCW in the early 90s, DDP broke in as a manager. He was, was he the Diamond Doll, I think, maybe, or Scott Hall was the Diamond Stud. They worked together, basically. And they were friendly in WCW as well during the whole NWO period. Hopefully they can do something with him. Last piece of news I wanted to mention here before I get onto the mailbag, the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, Dan Gable Museum in Waterloo, Iowa, issued a press release this week announcing its 2013 Hall of Fame class. It's being headlined by Ric Flair, hopefully, if he can get rid of that blood clot, Edge, and UFC fighter Matt Hughes, who was a former two-time All-American wrestler. I guess that would make him the All-American American, wouldn't it? Matt Hughes actually retired this week. He actually announced his retirement this week from fighting. So maybe WWE can bring him in to feud with Swagger. Give Jack Swagger something to do. Anyway, the reason I bring all this up is because at the ceremony this July, there will be someone else who is honored for his achievements in the wrestling business. And no, it's not me. That man has been chosen by a special committee to receive the Jim Melby Award, which recognizes excellence in pro wrestling journalism, and I am honored to consider him a friend of mine, Mr. George Napolitano, who is now on Twitter, by the way, at Starshot9. That's at Starshot and the number 9. George has been around forever. He's got several picture books out featuring his photography work from over the years. He used to also write for his own magazines back in the day, so he didn't just take pictures, as he still does today. He used to write articles and everything. So he's a jack of all trades and just an all-around nice guy. So I wanted to make mention of this here and to congratulate him on his honor. And, you know, frankly, and I'm not just saying this because I know him, I think he should be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame as well. Everyone there already knows him. He's photographed some of the biggest matches in the history of that company. I mean, really in the history of lots of companies all over the world. And I think I may have asked him about this when I interviewed him on Sound Off 182. Cheek plug, if you want to hear my hour-long interview with George Napolitano, that's where you can find it. But it was his work that helped get a young Triple H noticed and signed by WCW back in, I want to say, 1993. You know, and that was at a time when the magazines meant a hell of a lot more to a wrestler's career than they do these days, the ones that are still around anyway, because a lot of them have died off. They've gone out of business. So it's really not much of an exaggeration to say that George was one of the people who's instrumental in the career of Triple H, who went on to be kind of a big deal, in case you didn't know. Men like George, Jim Johnston, who WWE.com did a great write-up on this week. He's the guy who's created most of the theme songs you've heard in WWE going back to the 1980s. You know, men like this deserve recognition in the WWE Hall of Fame. I know they may not be marketable, but you can pick four or five other guys. You can pick four or five wrestlers who are marketable, you know, to induct and just include men like this in the Hall of Fame class along with them. Because to me, they deserve the recognition more than some wrestlers even do for their work over the years. Mailbag time. If you have questions and shout-outs to submit to me, the best way to do that is by email, thesolemonster@gmail.com. There are still some people who like to Facebook that stuff to me. Probably a bad idea. Email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. This first one comes from Shane from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. He says, "Hey, Solemonster, congratulations on getting your editorial spot with the Layfield Report." Thank you, thank you. "I would like to ask for a shout-out for my 18th birthday coming up on January 29th. Nothing better than getting a shout-out and becoming legal. A legal adult, all in 1 week." So that comes from Shane. So you hear that, ladies? Shane is legal now. So any of you college girls planning on heading down to Fort Lauderdale for spring break, give him a shout. Give him a call. Nobody parties harder than Shane. Mind you, this is just what I've heard. I can't actually confirm this. I've never met him in person. I'm going by second and third-hand accounts. But give him a buzz. Zach writes in, with Dolph entering the Rumble at number one, how long do you see him lasting? Also, who do you think got the best reaction for their return in a Royal Rumble match? I think Dolph will be there until the end, meaning Final Four. You know, could he be eliminated by John Cena at the end? Yeah, I could see that, but I'm still sticking with him as my new pick. As far as the best reaction to a Rumble return, to me, it has to be John Cena in the 2008 Rumble at Madison Square Garden. I was there live for that show, and the people were legitimately shocked. They were in a state of shock and panic when his music hit at number 30. And it was hilarious to me, the reaction, because people are going nuts for like 45 seconds straight until Cena actually gets in the ring and starts mixing it up with I think it was Mark Henry. And all of a sudden, the boos just rain down upon him. It's like, it's as though people realize, hey, we're supposed to hate this guy. You know, what are we doing cheering for him? But the response was huge. I think Edge got a good reaction for his return in 2010, but you know, nothing like Cena's. And actually, if I had to go with a number two, honestly, I'd probably pick Kevin Nash returning as Diesel in the 2011 Rumble. That was a pretty big one, too. Ant from Bolton, UK writes in, keep up the great work. Love listening to the show every Monday morning while walking my dog. With the Royal Rumble on the way, I have been looking back on some previous events. One of them was the 2005 show, and I had almost forgot about the ending to the 30-man Rumble match. It was a bizarre finish with Cena, Batista, and even Vince McMahon coming in and cracking his knee on the side of the ring. Did WWE mess up that night, and was Vince so frustrated that he had to walk out? I also wanted to get your opinion on if WWE hadn't have decided to add the stipulation of the winner getting a title shot at WrestleMania, would the Rumble still be around today? Well, to answer your second question first, no. At least not as a pay-per-view concept. I think if you take away the perceived significance of winning the Rumble match, and I say perceived because let's face it, the winner of the Royal Rumble over the last 2 years has opened WrestleMania, which is hardly headlining the show. It takes away from the prestige of the event, in my opinion. But still, you're fighting for something. You know, to a lot of people, it's a big deal. Without that, or without a title on the line or something like that, it doesn't mean nearly as much, and you're essentially left with the King of the Ring, which did poor enough as a pay-per-view concept that they got rid of it, which I think is what probably would have ended up happening to the Royal Rumble. But back to your first question about the 2005 match, what happened is that Batista was supposed to dump Cena out of the ring with that powerbomb, allegedly, and what ended up happening is both guys fell out of the ring and landed on the floor. I almost have a hard time believing this just because it was a picture-perfect landing. Like, this could not have been timed any better. Both guys, when they fell out of the ring, it wasn't like, oh, it was so obvious that Cena's feet hit first or Batista's feet hit first. No, these guys hit the ground at the exact same time. But anyway, this infuriated Vince McMahon to the point where there was a great deal of confusion. You know, the referees didn't know what to do. One referee said Cena won, the other referee said Batista won. And Vince decided to just come marching down to the ring in a fit of rage. Only in his fit of rage, when he went to slide into the ring, he smashed his knee against the apron and ended up tearing his quad muscle in the process. That's why when he went to stand up, he just collapsed in a heap. You know, it was very awkward seeing him just sitting there as the referees are standing there. John Cena's pleading his case. Batista's pleading his case. They're both looking down at Vince sitting on his ass, leaning up against the ropes. So, you know, they ended up wrestling another 2 minutes, and Batista just won the match anyway. But that's pretty much what happened. And, of course, when he went backstage and trying to look all macho and not showing any weakness, Vince tried walking around, and he ended up tearing his other quad in the process. It still mystifies me how a 60-year-old man can tear both of his quads and be back to work within 2 or 3 months. You know, when a well-conditioned athlete like his son-in-law, okay, look at Triple H, he needed 8 months of rehab to repair one quad. But I guess since Vince wasn't actively competing the way Triple H was, and he wasn't expected to do as much, he was able to come back to work a little bit early. But I don't know about that one. That still has me scratching my head. Jason from San Diego, good afternoon. My birthday is January 25th, and I wanted to know if I can get the highly coveted birthday shout-out on the next podcast. So Happy birthday, Jason. Highly coveted indeed, by the way. For all the shout-outs I'm able to do here on the show, you would be surprised how many don't make it. So consider yourself one of the lucky ones. Anyway, he says, I don't have any questions today, so I'd like to share something with you. My daughter just turned 8 a few weeks ago, and she willingly watches wrestling with me. She follows all of the storylines and knows a lot of the wrestlers. I found it funny when we watched TNA, and she noted that the arena is a lot smaller than WWE. And while watching the first Ziggler vs. Cena match from earlier this year, the first Raw of 2013, and keep in mind, apparently Jason says she is a John Cena fan, his daughter got highly irritated and said, ugh, why does Cena keep kicking out? I had no answer for her, and I think I would have had an easier time telling her about the birds and the bees than explaining this one. I think that proves that children can still be behind Cena even if he loses once in a while. Keep up the good work. The first hour or two of my workday on Monday is reserved for your show. So that comes from Jason. This one comes from Alex. I've been a listener since episode 156 and just celebrated my 100th episode as a fan of yours. I own 3 smoke shops called Smoke City in Michigan, and the cigars that Joe Park gave to Bully Ray on Impact a few weeks ago are Partagas Black Label. I sell them in my stores and recognize the box. They are made in Santiago, Dominican Republic, and are 100% legal. It's also a damn good cigar. So thank you, Alex. Andrew from Michigan. Speaking of Michigan, listeners since episode 18, here's something interesting. I was playing WWE All-Stars with my nephew a few weeks ago, and he's pretty telling how bad things are when he was telling me he doesn't even watch WWE anymore. This is coming from an 8-year-old. Their key demographic is turning away from their product, so maybe they need to start targeting younger kids. My other nephew is 4. Maybe they need to target him. Jeez, is there some sort of revolt I'm not aware of about 8-year-olds against WWE? That's 2 this week alone. But sure, you know, maybe they should be targeting an even younger demographic. How about toddlers? How about that? Maybe they should go after the 18 months and younger demo. I bet you even they watched that John Cena atrocity from Monday night and spit up all over their mommy. Then we'll have to move on to targeting kids pre-birth. We'll have to target them, we'll have to get them early. We'll have to get them while they're in the womb. That may be WWE's only hope at this point. They just gotta keep going younger. This comes from Nick Boyd. This past Wednesday, I was in attendance for the TNA Impact show here in Glasgow. It was an amazing show, and I would definitely go again. The addition of Sting in the main event with Kurt Angle against D-Von and Doc, with some help from Mike Knox, was awesome. One thing that got me thinking, though, was why was RVD allowed to enter the UK considering his past drug issues? It stopped Jeff Hardy, so why did it not affect him? Simple, because RVD has never been convicted of a felony. It has little to do with drugs and everything to do with Hardy having a felony on his record. That could just as easily be a felony for a violent crime. It could be a felony for a white-collar crime as opposed to drugs. It doesn't matter. I mean, I know Van Damme got arrested back in 06 with Sabu. That was when they got pulled over. He got suspended. He had the WWE title taken away from him. He had the ECW title taken away from him. But I don't believe he was ever convicted of an actual crime. That's the big difference. Derek from Los Angeles. Hello, Salamaster. I was wondering if I can get a shout-out for my sister, who is having a baby girl due in 2 weeks. There you go, WWE's latest fan. And she wanted me to ask you a question. What TNA guys would you see getting big pushes in WWE? She says Bobby Roode, seeing as how The Rock is a huge fan of his and even put Bobby over on Twitter a while back. Maybe AJ Styles, considering he was offered a developmental deal back in 2005. What do you think? Yeah, I could see those two. I mean, with the stuff that Bobby Roode and Aries have been doing of late, they'd be fools if WWE got their hands on them and they didn't know what to do with them, then they don't deserve to be in business anymore, as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, I could see both those guys. Obviously, guys like Sting, Kurt Angle, Bully Ray, I think would be, all of them would be pushed by WWE. But as far as homegrown TNA guys go, I really think they would want to use Joseph Park to his comedic potential. But, you know, then again, I think Colt Cabana would be good for them for that same reason, and they won't even sign him. But I think Joe Park would do well. I'd like to think Austin Aries has opened some eyes over the past year and would get pushed. And you know what? I'm going to say Hernandez would do well also. They're always on the lookout for a new Hispanic star, and I could see Vince McMahon or Triple H taking one look at him and thinking, wow, look at the size on this guy. We could work with this. So I think Hernandez would do well, too. Cameron from Chandler, Arizona writes in, I've been listening to your show since episode 235, where you read the lyrics to Layla's amazingly bad theme song, and it's only fitting that my first question is about the Divas. During the 2004 Raw Diva Search, the one Christy Hemme won, there was an episode of Raw where Maria was voted off, and she hugged everybody except Carmella. She got flipped off instead. I also heard not many people backstage liked Carmella, yet it seemed really much like she was favored to win over Christy. My question is, why wasn't Carmella very popular backstage? I just remember her coming off as a real bitch, you know, which may have been the way that she was perceived backstage, too. Very attractive woman. Hot as hell. But not very likable. You know, the girls back then during that Diva Search would sometimes really take some stiff shots at one another verbally. I think at the time, Carmella was in a relationship with Jeff Garcia, who was a quarterback in the NFL. I want to say for the Cleveland Browns, although he played for a whole bunch of different teams. So it may have also been a jealousy thing, you know, like, you know, hey, my boyfriend is a quarterback in the NFL. What about yours? Type of thing. I think they're married now, actually. But she was definitely not well-liked. It was just a personality conflict. So that's really the reason. Lastly here, Brian wants to know, if you could choose between being a main event star for TNA or a mid-carder in WWE, which would you choose and why? Whichever one pays me more money. That's the honest-to-God answer. You know, with TNA, you get to go down to Orlando every week. You don't have to travel as much. You're still on national TV. And if they're paying me more money than WWE would, then it's a no-brainer. But if WWE ponied up enough cash and wanted to put me in a team with Justin Gabriel while Tyson Kidd is off healing up his knee injury, sounds good to me. If you have questions or shout-outs for the mailbag, or if you work for WWE and TNA and want to offer me a contract, you can email me, solomonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, @solomonster. It's my official handle. Facebook.com/thesolomonster. That's the official profile page on Facebook for yours truly and the show. You can send me a friend request. I will approve you. There'll probably be a very lively thread of discussion going on tonight on the Facebook page during the Royal Rumble. There is a thread every Monday night during Raw. Some exclusive photos, all that good stuff. So you can friend me on there. We have an official YouTube channel as well. My username on there is The Solomonster, all one word, with some old classic episodes from 2007. Full-length episodes of The Sound Off from way back when. Those are exclusively on the YouTube channel. And you can subscribe to The Sound Off for free in iTunes. Type in Solomonster Sounds Off. Subscribe. Every time a new episode goes up, it'll automatically be downloaded for you. You do not have to do any of the heavy lifting. It will already be done for you. You can be as lazy as you want to be and still be up to date with all the different episodes of The Sound Off. And, of course, you can now check me out on the Layfield Report, layfieldreport.com. Each and every week, I will have at least one column going up weekly for JBL's official website, and sometimes he'll tweet out links for my stories as well, so you can follow him if you want to. But that's layfieldreport.com. Again, my latest column went up yesterday, talking rock, punk, winners and losers for the week in WWE as we head into tonight's Royal Rumble. And again, thank you all for your support as well when it comes to stuff like that, because if it weren't for you, I wouldn't be able to do all these fun things. So I say thank you. So that's going to do it for episode 257. Enjoy the Royal Rumble tonight. I'm looking forward to the show. I hope you are too. And we'll have a full recap of the Rumble, all the events that happened there and at Raw tomorrow night on next weekend's show. That'll be episode 258. So until then, be well, stay safe, enjoy the Royal Rumble, and we'll see you right back here on SCScoops.com next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SCScoops.com.